The world of popular music turned upside down when the Beatles took hold in America, filling young musicians with a "we can do it" spirit that led to the formation of thousands of bands. Sadly, few of them were female, but June Millington's band, Fanny, the first all-women's band to be signed to a major record label, was an exception, winning the admiration of its peers around the world. June's now in her fifth decade as a performer and as an inspiration to young women. She's in the islands for a series of public appearances, and we spoke with her yesterday about the effect the Beatles had on her musical growth.
They were bringing back American music, so it was really incredible that it was cyclic. I mean, I had not listened to, for example, the blues growing up in Manila. Mm-hmm. But when we heard, American music coming back here via the Brits, for some reason, we all understood that it was something that was already familiar, but it was new and it was exciting. And it was so unexpected. And it was right after Kennedy was killed, you know, that John F. Kennedy was killed, that the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. And that was totally galvanizing. So the timing of everything was super important, and it just worked. It worked. I can't, sort of stress enough how important those club gigs were and the gigs at Air Force bases, military bases down to Santa Cruz, and teen centers were starting as we were really getting going with our band, the Svelts. Mm-hmm. Teen centers were a new invention, and they were so exciting and so fun. That meant we had more gigs. And that's very important to understand. You know, you don't just, like, start a band and just play in your room. Really, that's not the thing to do.
Yeah.
You have to have access to equipment and a chance to play out. Because when you're playing for people who are, well, in my case, I really feel the dancing part is important. We weren't doing listening concerts. We were doing music in which people were wanting to dance. And that, of course, united us all. Nobody was thinking about anything, you know?
Right.
When we were all playing and dancing to, say, like Boogaloo Down Broadway, you know, I'm In With the In Crowd, Do You Believe in Magic, Walk the Dog, Midnight Hour, My Girl. I mean, it was incredible. So we just kept honing our skills, but the honing our skills was so much fun. You know, every song just seemed to get sort of more, wow, what's this? You know, it's so great.
Yeah. Well, it also, the time was a transition from the record hop to live music, and there was an enormous demand for live music in that era, so you were able to catch that wave.
Yep. We were part of fulfilling the demand, and we had a corner on the market, because maybe there was another all-girl band in the area, but we didn't know of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we pretty much had, you know, the gigs that could be covered by a hot all-girl band. And we were into it, man. We could sing. We learned our harmonies. We practiced, but we got good grades. And that's also important, you know. I would need to stress that our experience with the type of music that was being played in Northern California, where you have Cold Blood, where you have Janis Joplin, you know,
mm-hmm.
where you have The Dead, was way different than what we found when we moved to Southern California. And that was another phase that was just as important. You know, now you're getting to the Flying Burrito Brothers. You're getting into Steely Dan, who I knew Skunk quite well, as it turned out, over the years, because he was my guitar repairman.
Mm-hmm.
You have a different caliber. You have the Southern California sound. I mean, I remember once... after going on the road with Fanny, we'd, of course, come back to L.A. and still be rehearsing. We rehearsed at a place, and we were told by our road manager that we had to really, really quit at 5 o'clock or whatever it was. We couldn't be late because there was another band waiting to rehearse right after us. And I saw those guys came in, and they just had, like, that thousand-yard stare. You know, they had a job to do. They were very serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Eagles, you know? And that's a very different discipline than what was happening in Northern California with, flower power and the allure of psychedelia and its own mystical story that was creating itself, you know, and Bill Graham helped create that along with the music. So that was a whole you know, a whole mystical quest that was quite different from what was happening in Southern California. Southern California was kind of drier, it is in weather, and a super business-like approach.
Where do you think it's going now for young women who want to play rock and roll? Do you think there are as many opportunities as you had?
You know, I don't think there's as many opportunities to play live.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
And that, I think that is, you know, for me, that's a regret because, as I said, playing live is one of the ways in which you really start to work out, you know, work out the jam, so to speak, where you get to the excitement and you experiment and you might fail. I mean, you know, for example, for us, I remember people really like our version, Fanny's version of Hey Bulldog, and I remember our falling in love with that song, but just kind of leaving that as it was and already knowing that we had to create something that was our own. And so we rehearsed that in the living room at Fanny Hill, and then we went out and played it at gigs along with the rest of our set, you know, trying it out. And, you know, it's like trying out a pair of clothes or trying out a bicycle or something. You find out where its parameters are and where it stretches and where it's yours. And, you know, we were able to get into that song and try it out like a piece of clothing, a suit, and make it ours. And you can still hear that today. I mean, I hear it today. I'm still a fan of our recording of Hey Bulldog. And it's simply because we had the opportunity to learn how to shape something, how to practice, how to get out in front of an audience and take chances and see what works.
Well, let's hope that that kind of momentum continues for another, you know, for the next generations to come, June.
Well, I would certainly like to see it happen, and I am, you know, I'm determined to be part of the women or the people on this earth who are helping carry the torch forward with the music that we've been developing, you know. And it takes really attention and a willingness to sort of go with the arduousness of doing the work. It's not easy. I mean, I am a student of music. I love arrangements. I love studying Bacharach and David, for example, his or their arrangements, and you know, many, many other people. I collect recording stories. I think it's all fascinating, and that informs what I do on stage and how I write and how I would approach recording something, for example. So maybe I'm unusual. Maybe I got bitten by the bug. But in addition to that, I was lucky in that our band got signed when we were, you know, like 2021 and ended up in L.A., and I had the opportunity to watch a lot of people work. And then we went on the road, and we got to watch a lot of people perform. I mean, we would open for them or, you know, double bill. So when you're, by the time we played, for example, with the Staple Singers, I guess I would have been 23, 24. And believe me, I watched them like a hawk. I mean, I thought that was incredibly special music, you know. So
that
type of thing where you build yourself up and you know that you're still learning and there it is, you know, you've been led to the water, all you have to do is drink, right?
Uh-huh.
Very lucky, very lucky. I just love music, and I love American music in particular. I'm a student of it. And I guess partly it's because my father was American, and we grew up in Manila, and my sister and I were playing ukuleles sitting by the transistor radio. So we were learning songs off the radio, you know. I mean, there's nothing like singing an Everly Brothers song with two ukuleles and two harmonies, you know.
And there's nothing like a life in music, June, is there?
It's so fulfilling, and it's so nice, and I feel so lucky to be able to continue and know that I can help a lot of people, both by playing, like standing in front of people. I mean, I just turned 69, so people can see me do what I do, I think, just as well as I was doing it, you know, when I was 20.
June Millington will be reading from her memoir, Land of a Thousand Bridges, today at noon in the Aloha Tower Marketplace Multipurpose Room. It's free, as is her performance this evening at Crossroads at Hawaiian Brian's in Honolulu. On Saturday, May 6th, she'll be at Hawaiian Sanctuary outside of Hilo.